Hello, everyone, and welcome to XYZ, the podcast about CNC, automation, robotics, business, and more. My name is Aaron Goff, owner of Goff Custom Knives, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nick Frank, from the Frank Brothers Guitar Company. How are you, mate?
I'm good. How you doing, buddy?
I am a tired boy.
Oh,
tired, I mean, you're grumpy boy.
You're still at your shop. I have, for those of you who don't know, we have this going on video as well. I mean, it's not public, but I have what would be a lovely view of Aaron's shop if Aaron's face wasn't in the way of it.
Yes, it's made worse by my face. But yes, normally I'm at home. Normally I go home and record from there. But no, the last couple of weeks, yeah, I've worked like over 80 hours in the last 7 days.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a lot.
I'm cranking through orders for Christmas. So.
Good for you. There's a knocking going on I don't know what it is.
It's probably me shaking my knees. It stopped now?
Oh, yeah. So you're 80 hours deep and how many cups of coffee?
I am so fueled by coffee. Last night I had to go home because I kind of came to awareness that I'd just been staring at the wall for about 20 minutes and it was about 7 p.m. and no amount of coffee was perking me up. So
yeah, at a certain point, coffee stops helping.
Yes. Yeah. And you have to know when to, if you don't go home when you need to, then you might go home with less fingers.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been
with,
crazy.
With busted product. Scrap.
Exactly. Yes.
I've gone home with scrap. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a pretty crazy couple of weeks. I've been very productive to the point that I've been able to clear out all of my back orders and then actually take some new orders. Wow. And I will be taking another round of orders tomorrow, which should still be shipping to people in time for Christmas.
That's unreal. That's like 9 days away.
Yeah. Well, luckily for my shipping in the United States, I only need like 2 days.
That's pretty good.
So I'm going to cut everything off on the 20th and then I'm going to collapse and not move for like 2 days.
Excellent. Are you taking some time off during the holidays?
Yes. Yeah. And part of the motivation for the massive push was, A, I haven't made enough money this year. So I have to, push to make some extra money. Try and end the year with no debt would be nice. Mm-hmm. And then also to be able to, take time off without a backlog, without having to think about that.
Yeah. Actually be able to take time off and relax.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it should be interesting. How are things with you?
Good. Yeah. I mean, we've been, working lots too.
Mm-hmm. As usual. I mean, you 60 or 70 hours a week isn't unusual for you, is it?
I don't know. I don't really think about it, but we work too late. Like we do 8.5 hours we start at 9:30. We end at 6. Those are our shop hours. Right. And then Tim and I work late, Tuesday and Wednesday.
Right.
And then, I lose an hour talking to you, which I count as work.
Worth it.
That's what really exhausts me. No, and right. But Catherine's been working shift. Like my wife's back working. She's off mat leave,
and she works as a nurse, right?
Yeah, and she's got shift work, so it's like crazy hours. It's totally weird. So it's thrown off my routine. Right. So now I'll just work when I can work. Like when I can work late, I'll work late. And sometimes I'm working now. I'm like almost working more. It's like,
right.
If I can work late three nights in a week, I'll just do it.
Right.
I kind of like working late. I'm like pretty efficient and pretty productive after everyone's gone.
Yeah. I agree with you about when I was working in software, I was like the only person in the office that knew the nighttime cleaners because I would still be there when they would get there. And I agree, that's a very productive time, but I don't like doing it because I have to. Mm-hmm. If you're in the zone and you're just cruising and it feels natural, then that's great. But if you're like, oh God, I'd rather be anywhere else, and you're forcing yourself to do it, it's a lot less fun.
Yeah. But no, we've been just cruising along with production. So it hasn't been like absolutely necessary, but we kind of just are used to doing that. And
Right.
I like it. But yeah, we've been, I've been loving batch work.
Oh, yeah.
I've been doing like 10 guitars, like, per batch. It's been pretty sweet.
Nice.
Still, we still have some of this custom stuff that we're like, we're trying to stop taking on that is slowing that down or making that a little bit more challenging.
What do you mean by custom stuff in this?
Well, somebody,
all your guitars are custom. So.
They are. They're customized, but sometimes people will want like a, something engraved on the back of the headstock.
Right. Something that's customized outside of your normal range of customizable options.
Yeah. Custom can mean like you get to choose the top color, the wood types of wood, like whether the, you know, there's binding or no binding, what kind of inlays it has. But those are all within, you know, the normal offerings. But it,
so if someone comes along and they're like, I want an arcade ultralight in a, you know, flying V shape.
Yeah, that we say no to. But somebody will be like, I want my name engraved in the back of the headstock. And now we've got to, you know, do that.
Make a custom process for doing it. Yeah, I get it.
So we're slowly, no is our new favorite word. We keep joking about that. We still have like a trillion options. So we really don't have to say no that often. It's just, or we give really long lead times for that sort of stuff.
Right. You know what? No is a very important word.
Yeah.
No is and a very important word.
A lot of people respect it.
Especially if you give an explanation. You're not just like, nah.
Yeah. And yeah, when we do, well, like we communicate a lot with the people we're talking to and, we'll usually not make an excuse, but just say like, nope, we're not taking on that work anymore. I don't know. I don't do that. Tim does that, but people seem to be totally cool with it. For a long time, we just assumed people would be like, oh, I can't get my name in the back of the headstock. Well, fuck you. I'm going somewhere else.
Cancel the order.
Yeah. Or like, I'm not going to put my order in. But people just move on. They'll just be like, okay, cool. Well, I'll get a tortoiseshell pickguard instead.
Right.
So, yeah, I've been just doing batch work, but it's like, I've still got stuff going on the axes, and my, like the Haas is just outperforming it. And it's not just the machine, you know, I don't have to do tool changes and stuff like that. Like swap the tool set, which, you know, is much faster. And like the machine is obviously faster, but it also just like the process pallet system and vacuum and stuff like that. But it's outperforming the axes machine so much that like today I didn't even have the Haas on. I'm so backlogged on the stuff. So we're starting to, you know, we've migrated a lot more stuff over to the Haas. So now I don't have as much stuff that I do on the axes anymore, but when I do, it's like, it's right now it's next and we're migrating that over. But we want to also take this opportunity to update, the way we're building them. So it's going to be a bit of a slower process, and that's why we've sort of been holding off on doing it.
But I mean, finding new bottlenecks is a sign of progress.
It's true. Yeah. It's the bottleneck is always shifting.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing. That's always in a different place. Right now it's like, it's that. And also because of production in the woodworking process has been going so fast, we have a backlog in assembly.
Right.
And finish. Right. So yeah, it's like it really changes the target of how many guitars we think we can get out. It's like, oh well, we could definitely make, you know, X amount, but can we finish X amount of guitars?
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been good. It hasn't been all like rosy, you know. There's you know.
Dish us some shit. Come on.
I don't even know. Yeah, it's just regular old stuff like scrapping parts and or like we made up some like doing batch work. Like we've talked about this, it's risky Because if you make a mistake on one part, you could make a mistake on 10 parts. So that happened today.
More than likely you do. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Was it 10 bodies or something? Or?
No, it wasn't that big. It was these tortoiseshell pickup rings that we make. Mm. So it really has nothing to do with the machining side of things. It's just the glue up process didn't go well. And it'd be one thing if it didn't go well on one part, but it didn't go well on, like, you know, I don't know, 6 parts. Luckily, it wasn't that big a batch, but, well, you know, I'm trying to, like, we're trying to get everybody over to the batch.
Acetate's expensive, isn't it?
Super expensive and not that easy to get, you know, like, that's another thing. We've been having supply chain issues, and that's one of those things that's been harder to get. And we're running low on it. So we're going to salvage these. I've actually peeled. I've already started the process of salvaging them. You'll never know that there was an issue. Like, it's not going to compromise the quality of the product. It's just rework. And this is one of the things. It's like, no matter what, I think this is no matter how good you get at this stuff, there's always going to be some amount of rework. And that's just frustrating.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm a lot less hesitant to just throw shit out now. You know, I used to try and rework every little thing, and now I'm like, you know what? That's going to take an hour. I have the drawer of shame. I just have a big drawer full of shame.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Sometimes you're like, oh, I'll fix this another. I'll restart and I'll fix this another time. And then you never.
Yeah.
Fix
and
it.
Then the next
and then you
time
change your process entirely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, we, you know, okay. So another huge fuck up was I forgot to put a F hole into somebody's guitar. I thought they just weren't getting an F hole. We finished the guitar. We're like, hey, your guitar's ready to ship. And he's like, well, where's my F hole? We're like,
oh no.
Fuck. So it was one of those things where
good
we were
thing
like,
you're used to machining them with the finish on and everything.
Yeah, but it's bound, so we can't do that. It'll have to be refinished. So it was one of those things where we're like, should we just start this guitar from scratch and like sell it as is, you know, because it's a cool guitar without the F-hole. But it's also kind of, it's like a pretty custom guitar. So,
Yeah.
Anyways, well, it's just like, it takes time.
That reminds me of one of my earliest Resolutes, one of my friends, very lovely guy. He insists on buying serial number 8 of everything I make.
Okay. Is that like a lucky number?
With the Resolute. I guess so, yeah.
And is that a cultural thing?
I don't think so. But unfortunately, with this one, I made 2 number 8s. I did the same serial number on 2 knives. Yeah, he was like, really, man? Out of all of them, it had to be this one.
So what did you do? What did you do with one of them?
Well, there's 2 number 8s out in the world.
Oh, okay. You just live with it.
I'm not. Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things, right? Like, I'm not going to scrap a whole knife just because it has, you know, if I had accidentally done 20 number 8s, then like that.
Yeah.
They were very different looking knives, so it was fine. It is what it is.
Yeah, this is number 8 with the black handle, and this is number 8 with the green handle.
Yeah, exactly. And I haven't made that mistake since.
That's good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like we made that mistake once years ago.
Mm.
So there probably are 2 guitars with the same serial number kicking around out there.
Yes, it happens, unfortunately. So I've been, we've talked about this a few times, but I've been running Lights Out a lot the last little while. And as you know, the biggest issue for running Lights Out is process reliability. You know, your tools have to last a known amount of time. You can't have like tools blowing up and stuff. And I've been having tools blow up. And you and I have been talking about this, and I've been like, why is this happening? Like, it's never used to happen. And I've worked it out. I got to see it happen, which is one of those fun bits. So I think I said a couple of weeks ago that I saw one part of the process where I was actually like dropping a piece of material off. Like I was kind of like slotting down, dropping this piece off. And then sometimes there'd be just like a little tiny skin of material holding the offcut onto the main piece, and the tool would come to like cut it off. And rather than kind of deflecting away from the tool, it would deflect into the tool. and then, you know, do some bad things to the tool. So I fixed that. That was great. But then I came into the shop the other day and there was just a little stump where there should have been an end mill, you know?
Mm.
And then I was like, fuck. So I changed all the tools. And then I was just kind of watching it on the next run and I got to actually see it happen in person. And I
with the brand new end mill.
Obliterated. brand new end mill. Yeah. First run. It was super interesting though. So basically what's happening is on the very first operation, I'm hard milling. So I'm doing like a high feed style pocketing. So I'm kind of stepping down into a pocket.
Okay.
And I have to go all the way through the material. So there's a cavity in the fixture underneath and the tool ends up like protruding into that cavity and cutting all the way through the stock, right? But the problem is that the floor of that pocket actually cracks away from the main material and gets dropped out. Like it's not what I'm trying to do, but the material is like quite hard and brittle. So, and they're also very strong. So it's making this like floor of this pocket kind of break away. And then in some cases that piece of steel, you know, which is like an inch or 3/4 of an inch wide and like 2 inches long. So it's like not small, yeah, but it's only like 0.001 inch thick. It's like shim stock, right?
Right. Okay.
It's actually getting picked up by the air blast and pushed against the wall of the part in between the part and the end mill.
Yeah.
And so I just heard this like bang and I turned around and I could see this like bit of steel in that spot. And I was like, oh, okay. So, but that now I've finally worked out what the last thing is that's causing those unexpected failures. And I fixed it with magnets.
Oh, okay.
So I just
supposed to just turning that into chips,
changing the process. Well, the problem is, I would have to go to like a high-speed machining style rather than a high-feed style to turn it into chips. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm doing high-feed and in some places and high-speed machining in the other is to spread out wear across different parts of the tool.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I could totally change it, but it would definitely decrease my tool life, which is not great. So all I did was took – you've seen those like flexible plastic magnets that you can like put on a whiteboard or whatever.
Sure, like a fridge magnet.
Move around as labels. Yeah, exactly. I have a bunch of those, so I took one of those, cut it to the right size for the kind of pocket in the underside of this fixture, and double-side taped it down so that now when that little, the floor of that pocket gets dropped out, it sticks to the little magnet at the bottom. It doesn't have a chance to get blown up by the tool.
And the magnet's strong enough?
Air blast. Oh, yeah, totally. But weak enough that I can still just vacuum all the chips out and everything.
Right.
Works great.
Oh, yeah. That's killer. Clever little workaround.
I was proud of that.
Nice.
Well, and then also I was reaching through the pocket and using the top part of the flutes of the end mill because, you know, the closer you get to the spindle, the more rigid the tool is. So generally, if you have the space, you reach through, you know, use the uppermost part of the flute in order to do the finishing of this pocket.
Right.
But I realized in doing that, I was sometimes, you know, if the little bits of metal in the bottom there were kind of sticking up, the bottom of the tool would bring them up into the way as well.
Oh, okay.
So I changed it so that I'm just reaching through as much as I have to and haven't had a tool blow up or get unexpectedly chipped since then.
And so the finish is just as good?
Yep. Yeah, no worries at all.
Is this inside the handle though? That's what I'm picturing. Okay. Yeah. So it wouldn't matter anyways. I mean,
yeah. So it's the weight reduction pockets inside the handle. I mean, it doesn't matter because no one will ever see it. But if you grind the handle scales off one of my knives, the finish on the inside is just as nice as everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere else, I should say.
I suggest everyone do that and then buy another knife from Aaron.
That, perfect. Thank you. So, yes, that's just one of those little things that I was kind of pleased about. And then, yeah, I'm shipping a lot of knives this month by my
standards, cool.
At least.
So what's what's like, do you do a shipping day or do you just get them out as soon as you can?
I just get them out as soon as I can. Yeah, nice. I'll just kind of go until I have a bunch of stuff ready. I'm not like stockpiling stuff. I just, you know, I just finished boxing up some stuff about an hour ago. Obviously, I'm not going to get a pickup now, so I'll just ship it tomorrow.
And you said DHL is who you use?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And I've been very happy with them so far. They've only lost one knife this year.
Yeah, I've been happy with DHL as well. They actually just.
And I mean, honestly.
Oh, I was just going to
say. You're going to lose some.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a small box like that, I guess it's a higher risk. If they lose some of our product, I'd be pretty pissed.
Yes.
I mean, you put a huge amount of work into each one of those knives, but yeah, I've yet to have them or anybody lose a guitar entirely. Just temporarily.
Right.
Knock on wood.
Right. Yeah, mine have always been cases of theft. You know, customers receiving boxes that are empty, or I'll receive a box back, you know, on a return.
And so who's stealing it? A DHL employee?
It could be. Or just someone in one of the warehouses or whatever, right?
That's crazy. What else are they stealing? That seems like a huge risk. You know,
I do take some steps to kind of like anonymize what's in the package too. You know, like it could say Resolute Mark 3, whatever on the side, but instead it says like Res 3, you know, like I use abbreviations for stuff on the outside.
They probably think it's like some wireless headphones or something. They open it up and like,
sweet.
A hunting
new
knife.
Beats. They just toss it in the bin. I don't need a hunting knife. Oh, yeah. I saw the other day because have you bought a 3D printer yet?
No.
No, you haven't. Did you see that Prusa announced that they have a new printer?
Didn't we talk about it?
We talked about this last week.
Yeah, no, I scoped it out. Looks killer. Are you going to get one?
But building on top of that, we'll see. We can talk about that in a minute. Mm. But building on top of that, they just released... or announced an automated print farm system.
Okay.
So you can set up a bunch of those like Prusa XL style printers in this like modular rack system. And then they're accessible at the back via like doors so that you can hot swap them out if there's an issue. You just like put in a spare and it just starts working. And then at the front of the system, there's like a gantry robot that loads build plates and unloads finished parts.
Oh, that's
and you
sick.
Just like set
They're
up
automated.
A queue. Yeah, you just set up a queue of parts, and the print farm goes to work, prints your parts, and then like dispenses them out of a slot in the front.
Is this available?
I believe it's their like demo system right now. So they have one of the largest like 3D printer farms in the world. I think like. A lot of parts for Prusa printers are actually printed in their print farm, and they have like, I think it's like 1,000 printers. All right, let me look up the exact number. But I think they're basically like taking that experience and trying to translate it into a more, you know, automated kind of system, I guess.
That's cool. I mean, it's interesting that they're, yeah, trying to, because I mean, when I think of this style of printer, I think prototype or something like, you know, do you think a lot of people are using them for production parts?
I mean, yeah, I've heard from numerous people that do use them for production parts.
It's awesome.
Yeah, and depending on the filament that you're using, like the material that you're printing with, they can be really strong. You know, so yeah, I can totally see, and they just keep getting better and cheaper, you know.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
Every year.
Yeah, I can't wait to get one. Cool. You know what else I want now though is a pocket NC. Why?
Oh, really? Why? Yeah. Why do you want one of those?
I just think 5-axis is so cool, and what I really want is a 5-axis CNC.
Right.
But I just think they're neat. They're cool. You wouldn't want one?
They are. That's true.
I mean, I don't think you're going to get the best finishes off
of
them.
No. I'm trying to remember the name of this website. I found a website the other day that has like a pocket, you know, made in China pocket NC clone for like $500.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Because pocket NCs are like $7,000.
Yeah, they're not cheap for what they are.
You know who sells them?
Who?
McMaster Car.
Really?
Oh, yeah. If you search CNC on McMaster, they don't obviously label who the manufacturer is, but they sell a 5-axis tabletop CNC milling machine in an aluminum case, which I've never seen before for Pocket NC, but it looks identical.
Right. Of course it is. That's amazing. Okay, here it is. Where is it? So there's a website called Robot Dig, which is kind of synonymous with like cheap CNC parts and 3D printer, you know, crap. Mm-hmm. Where is it? I saw it the other day on their website and I was like, are you serious? Like, you can buy a 5-axis CNC machine for like $500.
Oh, I see it. Yeah, yeah. $750.
Okay. There you go. You found it before me. So if you want to...
It's funny. If you search Pocket NC, it comes up.
That's what comes up?
That's
a bit dodgy.
Yeah. It's too bad. Yeah. There's nothing I would make on it, I don't think, that would be
actually useful.
A product that we sell. But I think it would just be really fun to have. Something I would want it, like, to have at home. In the same vein as a 3D printer.
Right.
Something to play
with. So thank you for this perfect segue, because I do actually have in my notes here that which company was it? It was like one of the cheapish 3D printers. Oh, it was Creality. I saw a video for some reason uploaded by Creality. It doesn't look like the machine's made by them though, of a 5-axis 3D printer.
Oh yeah, okay.
Which is super cool. So it, you know, enables the printing of a lot of weird shapes without any supports. But like whoever's making this printer is like super into it, because they've got Renishaw probing on this machine for both the nozzle and the part. Like, you know,
so what, you touch off the nozzle? So is this a hobby? Like, somebody just made this for fun, or is it going to be a product?
No, I have no idea. I know that multiple companies are working on 5-axis 3D printing, but a lot of the ones that I've seen, they're not really using like a 5-axis CNC as the platform. They're more of a using like a an industrial robot arm.
Oh yeah,
Move the extruder, which is obviously going to be less accurate, much slower. Mm-hmm. This thing looked pretty good. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. It's a very, very short video, but it looks very, very cool to see 5-axis 3D printing. Like,
5-axis is the way of the future, man. Do you think you could use 5-axis? Like, would that help your product at all?
Not really. I mean, even, you know, so John Grimstone has a very beautiful 5-axis machine and uses it to make knives, but he's mainly using the 5-axis as
positional,
more like, almost like a horizontal machining center. Like, he's got like little tiny tombstones, mm-hmm. you know, for each of his processes. But there are definitely some bits where he's using the 5-axis to his advantage to get a weird angle or something.
Right. They're just so cool. I want one.
Well, so we talked last episode. I told you guys that I was working on a CNC control system.
Yeah.
And that is coming along like way faster than I thought it would. I have the little tiny microcontroller here on my desk hooked up to a closed loop stepper drive, and a little NEMO 17 stepper motor, and it'll run it. Like, it'll actually do 3 axes simultaneously already, acceleration and deceleration, all that good stuff.
Cool. So what does the interface look like?
Right now it's all just code. So you just, you know, quickly write a bit of code saying like, you know, move from this position to this position, mm-hmm. and then upload it to the board and it just runs. But in the longer term, basically it's going to be taking commands over serial. So it'll be like a very simplified version of G-code. And then there'll be another computer like a Raspberry Pi or whatever that takes standard G-code as the input, and then kind of works through that and decomposes it into simpler G code to feed to the little computer.
What will they like the screen? Will it be like a Windows sort of looking thing?
I won't be running Windows because Windows is shit. It'll be running Linux. But it, more than likely you won't see that. It'll just be like a touchscreen interface with some physical buttons, Nick. Physical buttons.
I like those ones you twist, you know? Put those some of those in there for me.
Yeah. It's definitely going to have an MPG. It's definitely going to have like access selection because I know you like that.
That's my jam. Although I don't have it now. Yeah. We'll have a jog wheel.
Know. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Where do you get a jog wheel?
Oh, you can buy them all over the place. Easy.
Tight.
Normally they're called MPGs, manual pulse generators.
Oh, so you already said that. Right.
Yes.
I just don't speak. So I have to explain it to you twice. The lingo.
Can speak nerd. I know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm like, I'm super pleased with this thing so far. So like the entire code for this system would fit on like a single piece of paper in like a readable size font right now. Hmm. It's like literally maybe 120 lines of code. And the reason I'm able to write it clearly like that is because I'm running it on like a super high performance little microcontroller, which means I don't have to do, you know, I don't have to jump through a bunch of crazy hoops to make it do the things I need it to do. So, yeah, I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, that's going to be... So, what's the first thing you're going to control with it? Like,
well, funnily enough, I realized... So, one of the things that's been holding me up with doing the automated sandblasting cabinet was that I would need to make a control for it. You know, it doesn't need to be very complicated, but it has to be able to, like, home the machine, move the axes around. Well, I've accidentally built the controller for that.
Perfect. You know? Okay. So like, we're going to see some progress.
Yeah, this will totally do it.
Yeah. That rules. Yeah.
And then a little bit down the road. So I'm going to have to push this off a bit just because of other stuff. But like basically part of my plan right now is next year is going to be the year of the moving to the country.
Yeah.
I'm going to get out of the city, get my own shop. The second I have space, I'm going to get another Fidal, and that is going to become my testbed machine. So I'm going to basically tear it down, and the goal is that it will get, you know, really powerful brushless AC servos on all axes. The counterweight will be removed from the head. The column will get filled with polymer concrete. The Z-axis servo will have a brake on it so that it doesn't need the counterweight. And then... my CNC control system will get retrofitted into it. Nice. And then once that's proven to work, I'm hopefully going to be running my own CNC control on all my CNC machines, making my own knives.
Hell yeah. You should put one on my axes.
A little crazy, but... Oh, fuck yeah, buddy. Yeah, I could improve that thing a ton for you.
Yeah.
And we could get rid of your little dinky tool changer and give you a wine rack tool changer. The whole length of one side of your machine.
Yeah. I mean, in addition to the carousel, that'd be tight.
Sure. But yeah. I mean, those little tools are so small. If you just did a wine rack tool changer, you know, the whole width of the gantry, you'd get like 20 tools in that thing.
Yeah. So I could have 27 tools. I wonder if the heavy carousel on the one axis, like the one side of the gantry, fucks with it at all.
Probably not enough to like cause issues, but yeah, for sure. I mean, there'll be like more torque load on,
yeah,
because it has, if I remember correctly, it's rack and pinion on both sides of the gantry, right?
Yes. So in their control,
in the y-axis. Yeah. Two separate motors, one on each side, right?
Yes, that's right.
So, you know, one of those motors will be the limiting factor because it's having to move, you know, it's putting up with more racking because there's more momentum on one side.
Mm.
But yeah. Yeah, we could do some pretty nasty stuff with that, with some new brushless servos and stuff.
Yeah, it's a good little platform. Although I, you know, shop totally. Space is limited, and if I could, I'd put another Haas there. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it might not be worth your time to do it. But for me with the Fidals, you know, I've reached the limits of the machines.
Right.
And it's not a mechanical issue. It's really a software issue.
Right.
So rip it out, make it better.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it a lot, but you know, working with what you got's a lot better than, or potentially a lot better than dropping $150K on a new machine. So.
Yeah. And a system like this, you know, if I was to go with somebody else's retrofit, which was what I was planning to do originally, one of the biggest issues with that is that, you know, 5 years down the line, they go out of business and then my system breaks and I can't do anything about it. You know, I can't get parts or whatever. So like this system that I'm building, I'm going to release it as open source, even if I don't continue maintaining it, which I will. But, you know, other people will probably end up using it. All of the parts will be like common off the shelf stuff. You know, there's not much to like, there's not much that's going to become impossible to replace, you know?
Right.
And that's a big thing.
Yeah. Well, I have to do some maintenance on my Haas. I don't have to replace any parts, but I know that they are readily available, which is handy. But I need to do some yearly maintenance on it. I feel like I want to take the weigh covers off and just peek inside, see how much dust is in there.
Too much wood dust.
Right. There's definitely going to be some, but I'm like, I have no idea.
Because you guys use the air blast and stuff, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, we've been making more dust since we've started using like more three flute tooling. And then I was talking to somebody else who's got they have a VF4, two VF4s, I think. They also run wood. Like they make guitars and they make they make aluminum components and they make wood components. So he was saying like, oh, my HFO was like all anxious about me cutting wood. And he was like, people just like, they group wood in with graphite.
Right. Yeah. It's not the same shit.
Grinding. Yeah, he was saying that he just keeps the tool changer clean. I think the tool changer arm specifically, and keeps the taper clean. I don't think he's taken his weigh covers off to look in there. He was like, oh, they've got like wiper blades. But I see the wood going under. Yeah. I see the dust going under the wiper blade. So,
well, I wouldn't be too worried about that. It's the issue is that the weigh covers are open on the bottom, right? Like they're closed off on the top, but usually, pretty much always, from my knowledge, the bottom of them is open. So if you're like blowing a lot of dust around, then the dust will just kind of go up underneath.
Right. I actually, I don't know. I haven't poked my head under there. I didn't think they were open.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't think they were?
No.
Well, I'll get a mirror. $5 they are.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, honestly, you should probably make it a high priority to get better dust collection in the machine. I mean,
yeah,
it's very easy to not do that just because it's a pain in the ass or whatever, but like, you know, it really does just reduce the likelihood of any other types of issues by so much.
Yeah. Yeah. Just collecting it at the source.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know it's on my to-do list. I mean, now that I'm using it a lot, so much more, you know, like 3 months ago, it wasn't getting nearly as much use. So now I'm making a lot of dust. I'm like filling the machine with wood chips.
Right. How's the because you've got a chip auger, right? Is the chip auger working to get most of it?
I almost never run it while I'm, you know, machining, because not that much dust gets there, like in the chip auger cavity, let's call it.
Right.
It gets everywhere and it's all over the bed of the machine. What do you call that? Like all the
the floor,
the chip pan.
Yeah.
It covers that, but it doesn't, like, you know, there's no coolant washing it down. It just stays there. So I usually, you know, halfway through the day, if I'm making a lot of chips, or at the end of the day, I'll turn the chip auger on, brush all the chips down that way, leave it for 5 minutes. It'll fill up the, you know, it'll start pumping wood chips into the garbage can. It takes all the wood chips that are in the auger area, moves them up, and then I'll have to come back, brush the chips back over, you know, probably be faster, honestly, to just use a shovel.
Or vacuum.
Well, you could use a vacuum, but then you get, like, it's a lot of dust, like a lot of chips, some dust.
Yeah.
And so now you're just emptying a vacuum constantly. Like, it's just, it honestly,
well,
just
you need
like
a
sure. But still, I mean, like, I'm filling up, I'll fill up like a garbage can a day.
Yeah, that's fine.
I could, or I could actually, just take a dustpan and use that as a shovel and be done in like 2 minutes. But I haven't even done that. I just run the chip auger, walk away.
Right. Well, you wouldn't have to do any of that if you had dust collection at the source. If it's good enough,
perhaps.
To pick everything up.
I wonder if how good I could get the dust collection if it would collect everything. It would need to be full 360 around.
Right. You've seen the graphite machines. Like, it's totally possible to collect everything.
I actually haven't.
Crazy
like,
enough about
I know
it.
That. Like Makino makes them.
They're nuts. Like
I haven't seen
the vacuum system.
The vacuum
like
system.
Half the size of the machine.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got like a full dust collector.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where do you, do they have videos of that? Cool. I want to see that.
They do. I can't remember where I saw it though, but it was like, they're using air blast to clear the graphite out of the cut. And then it like the graphite doesn't travel in a straight line. You see it like curving and going straight into like the wall of the machine where there's like a huge dust intake. And it's just like,
oh, you know, gone. That's what I need. Yeah. Like, cut like on, either side of the Z axis, way covers, just like big dust port, like ducts. That'd be sick.
Yeah. I mean, that wouldn't be too hard. It wouldn't have to be on the, on the enclosure of the machine, you mean, right? Like left and right of the Z-axis way cover?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Just on, like, against the wall.
Yeah, that'd be easy. Have you seen Lockline make giant bendy vacuum things?
I had them sitting in my...
Just chuck a couple of those in there.
I had them sitting in a cart for a while and never pulled the trigger. Mm. Yeah, no, I've got two ducts running from my dust collector. One goes to the back of the machine, one goes is right above the machine. I've only got one of them hooked up, so it would be right. An afternoon to do it.
Yeah, well, do it.
I don't have an afternoon. I gotta go to the dentist tomorrow. That's my afternoon.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other day when I was coming home on, I think it was Sunday night, I was so tired after work. I nearly put deodorant on my toothbrush.
Oh. What kind, like what, stick deodorant?
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, toothbrush in one hand. I was like, I gotta brush my teeth. And I was like, why isn't it working?
I've a number of times used my almost 2-year-old's toothpaste, which is like bubblegum flavored. I'm like, wow, what the fuck? But never deodorant.
Well, my ex used to brush her dog's teeth with this malt flavored toothpaste and she would leave it in the bathroom. And yeah, there was definitely a couple of close calls with that.
Yeah, yeah.
it smelled really good though.
Okay.
I'll give it that. Yeah.
They do say dogs' mouths are cleaner than humans. So just saying.
Yeah, yeah. I gave myself a Christmas present the other day, which I'm very excited about. You'll have to come over and try it out at some point, but over the course of this year, I've gotten into sim racing. So, you know, driving simulated cars very fast into walls.
Nice.
At times.
What kind of cars?
So I have, I'm into rally driving for the most part. I have a friend that's really into track racing. So he does like Formula One style racing, that kind of stuff. Cool. And they're both fun. The track racing, you really kind of zone out. You get into like a groove, you know where your like braking zones are.
Right.
And you're just trying to carve out, you know, brake 1 meter later. Get your gear change just a tiny bit better, you know. Whereas with rally, it's like fuck knows what's over the next corner, you know. Hold on to your pants and be ready to react.
Yeah, and they'll like rallies, like the course will be like just a 90 degree turn out of nowhere, right?
Yeah, or 180 degree turn. Yeah, absolutely.
They do some crazy shit. Yeah, those courses. Well,
the craziest thing about rally is the professional rally drivers, they get to do like a convoy pass. So they and their co-driver and all the other drivers will do like a slow speed pass through the stage. They get to see it once and then they have to drive it at full speed.
Yeah, that's nuts.
They don't get to practice. But their co-driver has to like go through, make notes as they do their, you know, oh, this is a fast left-hander, this is a slow right-hander.
Blah, yeah, whatever. That's like the navigator.
And then they have to just go in and, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
So when you're doing sim, do you have that? Like?
Yes. Yeah, for sim rally, you have a co-driver.
Cool. Is it a like person that you're a teammate with, or is it a...
You can actually do that. You can actually do that, yeah. But usually it's... like a computer generated co-driver. But yeah, so a couple of years ago I bought an inexpensive secondhand wheel that has like force feedback. So it'll, you know, if you hit something, the steering wheel is like turning in your hands. And then one of my friends let me try his one out, which is a much higher grade of wheel. And they're good enough these days that when you're driving on a track, I don't know if you've ever seen, they have those like red and white rumble strips on the apex of corners.
Right.
And on his wheel, when you put a wheel over one of those rumble strips, you actually feel the individual bumps in the steering
wheel. Crazy.
So I ended up buying the one step above his wheel. So I'm very excited about that. I'm waiting for it to come in January. But this thing, the reason I was kind of thought it was funny for this show is that if you have a look at the really expensive sim racing wheels, so you can spend $3,000, $4,000, whatever. I didn't, but you can totally spend $3,000 or $4,000 on the steering wheel. And that doesn't even come with an actual steering wheel. It's just like the thing that the steering wheel attaches to.
So right? Where do you get a steering wheel? Do you use like a proper real steering wheel, or do you have to buy like
you can?
A,
yeah. Okay. Yeah, they make ones that are like, you know, set up or ready to go, or you can, you know, use one out of a real car, but then you have to get like an adapter and all that kind of stuff. But they're basically just like the system that gives you the force feedback and that takes your input, like that the wheel actually attaches to, is called the wheelbase. And that thing in the high-end rigs is basically just a big fucking brushless industrial servo.
Huh.
Like... And when I say big, I mean like 3 or 4 horsepower. Like that thing has a whole bunch of really smart software attached to it so it doesn't break your fucking arms. Like, and basically they need all of that power so that they can, you know, when you're driving a car and you hit a clip an apex or something, it needs to be able to like, you know, give you that feedback of the steering system back into your hands.
Right. Of a 1-ton or so, two-ton system, car. I don't know, how much does a car weigh?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, like...
A lot.
A little servo wouldn't do the trick.
So the system that I bought is a medium-sized servo. It has 8 Newton meters of torque, which is quite a lot. That's as much as the servo motors that run my Fidals. On each of the axes.
That's
have,
cool.
Have about that much torque.
So now you have a backup
server. Yeah, so.
Just in case.
There you go. Exactly. But that is going to be so much fun. I'm really, really looking forward to trying that out. So that was my one present to myself for this year.
Nice. You deserve it.
Thank you, sir.
I bought myself some pajamas. Which, not nearly as exciting.
I bought myself some new socks the other day, if you want to talk about exciting.
See, that's what I'm into these days.
It's just been one of those years.
Older.
Yeah. Exactly. It's just been one of those years where like, the business has been fine, but I'm not exactly like buying a new car or anything.
Right. You bought a steering
wheel. Myself a wheel.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You can't even buy myself a steering wheel. You don't even have a license.
Well, that's why I've got the sim rig. I can practice.
Yeah.
Now when the driving instructor is like, oh, okay, do a parallel park. I can you know, chuck on the handbrake, drift right into the right into the parking spot.
Yeah, yeah. Here, do a 3-point drop turn. How about a 0-point turn, bitch?
Yeah, how about a handbrake turn, buddy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that'll cause me to fail my
test. I mean, no, as long as you don't touch the curb, that's the rule.
Okay, I'll have to learn all the rules so that I can abuse the spirit of the rules.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Find all the loopholes. Cool. Let's run.
Yeah. Yeah. So it should be fun. It's one of those things, like, I think it's only tangentially related, but I know that there's a bunch of people listening that are into motorsports, I'm sure. And motorsports are hilariously expensive. So sim racing is a fantastic way to get into them without remortgaging your house.
Yeah, true. It would be cool to have a car that you could take to the track. Like, it wouldn't have to be crazy.
Yes.
Like, you could just have like a Subaru.
I am actually planning to build a track car once I have a bit more space. Because, yeah, as you said, like, you know, for your daily driver car where you absolutely have to, you know, be able to, you know, drive to see your mom or something. You don't want that to be breaking down all the time. But for a tracker, who cares?
Yeah.
Just buy some, you know, $2,500 junker and it doesn't matter if you accidentally, you know, put it into a wall or something.
Yeah.
Good to go.
Yeah, there probably are a bunch of car people who listen to this. Machinists seem to like cars, bikes, or guns.
Mm-hmm. I like
all or knives.
Bikes probably the least. Yeah. Speaking of guns, I actually did see there's a YouTube channel that I love called Forgotten Weapons, which is presented by Ian, colloquially known as Gun Jesus. Like Jesus, get it?
Oh, okay.
And there's this company called Laugo Arms that introduced a new handgun called the Alien. Sick. And it's just super cool to see like the inside of this thing because it's very unusually made. Like it has a very unusual operating mechanism and design, and the machining on it is beautiful. And this is a $5,000 handgun, by the way.
Okay, is that
very expensive?
Okay, how much is not an expensive handgun? How much can you? How little can you spend to buy a handgun?
Like $150.
Oh wow.
So, yeah, this thing's designed mainly for competition shooting. So, if you're high speed, low drag, you know, Ipsic shooting or something like that, very, very fancy competition shooting, then, you know, maybe you'd buy one of these guys. They look very, very cool. I've always found firearms super interesting because they're very mechanical.
Sure, yeah.
And they have to operate, you know, this thousands of pounds of pressure, you know, thousands of PSI inside the barrel of one of those things, and it has to be, like, reliable, and you can pack it full of mud and it'll still operate, and you know, they're just interesting.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, and shooting guns is kind of fun. I'm not like that into guns, but I remember shooting guns at camp was fun.
Yeah, I'm not sure you get to do that anymore, but yes,
they're scary. They are scary though, I will say.
Well, they should be scary. They're supposed to be scary.
Yeah, I guess I'm
at least kind of. You're supposed to respect them.
Right. Yeah, definitely cool. Cars also, though, like the inner workings of a car. That's something I would love to know more about, especially owning a car and not wanting to be taken advantage of by a mechanic.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, I grew up in a family full of petrol heads. And my grandfather was a rally driver. Built his own rally cars and dune buggies and stuff.
Cool.
My dad has had more cars than birthdays.
Whoa.
Quite literally, but he's never bought a new car. And so he's had some crazy cars, man. Like we had, you know, looking back on it, it's super cool, but man, nothing makes you stick out at school more than when your dad drives you to school in his Rolls Royce.
Oh, what?
Yeah, but like people don't realize, you know, he bought that Rolls Royce for 12 grand,
right?
You know, it's not like a $100,000 car, but they're just so interesting.
So,
you know,
I was just gonna ask, like, so what does he have any machining background?
No, like he can fabricate stuff. He can weld. Okay. He can, you know, use but a metal lathe, whatever.
Yeah, he's got like he could run a bridge port or something like that. Like, does he make parts for the cars?
I'm wondering. So like my grandfather,
not off the shelf kind of parts, I'm guessing.
Well, that's the problem. There's a good saying with this kind of thing is there's nothing more expensive than a cheap luxury car.
Okay.
Because, you know, yeah, you get the car for cheap because the person that has it can't afford to maintain it anymore.
Right.
You know, like the parts are expensive. He couldn't make parts for that car. It was a Rolls-Royce Silver Shadow from the late 70s, I think. And he took it to a specialized mechanic at one point. And the guy was like, are you aware that two of the three brake systems have failed?
Ooh, that's scary.
Because apparently, because these things were made for, you know, rich and important people. So it had three redundant brake systems. It had a hydraulic brake system, a mechanical brake system, and then an electric brake system or something.
Okay. So that's unusual.
And two of the three had failed. Yeah,
that's what the third one. That's what the third one's there for.
Yeah, exactly. But that thing was crazy. It had a 7.5 liter aluminum block V8 in it. But like, the car weighed so much that it was still slow as hell.
Right. Nice. This thing looks...
Because of all the walnut burl.
Oh, yeah.
Holding it down.
That's beauty.
Yeah, it was a stupid car. But yeah, he's owned a lot of cars like that that are like hilariously impractical, very inexpensive because they were, you know, getting long in the tooth or they were, you know, all sorts of stories that I'd hear from him about someone was like selling this car cheap because quote unquote, it's broken. And then he would like, you know, change the alternator or something and it would just, it'd be fine.
Nice.
Yeah. So he's had some crazy cars. So that definitely runs in my blood for sure.
Cool. Well, once you get your property in a car, you can start fucking around with it.
Yes, I say that, and then it is very amusing that I don't have my license.
Right. Something about you being an immigrant, though, maybe you're like, I don't know. Did you ever feel like you could get a license here? Do you know what I mean? Like, only just got your permanent residency, right?
No, I've had my permanent residency for quite a while.
Oh, have you? Oh,
okay. Yeah, so I have, like, hundreds of hours logged of driving in Australia. I've had my driver's license since I was 16 years old. I literally still have a learner's permit since I was 16 years old. I literally still have a valid Australian learner's permit. I've had it for like 20 years. But you can, for some reason, they let you renew them indefinitely and they last for 10 years. So I've literally had my learner's permit for 20 years and it's still valid.
Maybe you'll get your real license there one day.
Seriously. Well, so I have owned a car. I bought a car, a project car when I was 16 and I bought it for $400 and I was working on it for quite a while there. Huh. And I left Australia on the day that I was supposed to take the test to get my full license.
Really? That's hilarious. So how old were you?
It's 21.
Wow.
And then just in Canada, in Toronto, you're living in the city, you know, getting insurance on a car here is like $500 a month. Like,
yeah, it's
expensive. What's the point? So I just,
what's the rule? Like,
never did it.
If I moved to Australia, could I get a license or would my license transfer? How the hell does that
yes.
work?
Yes, it would. So, yeah, if I had taken my full license test in Australia and then moved here, I could have just gotten a full license from that. Yeah, it's a bit stupid.
Well, it's...
is what it is.
It's not that hard to get. I'm sure it'll be fine. You can borrow my car if you need to.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Do you need it back in one piece?
Yeah, no drifting.
God damn it. I shouldn't have asked.
The snow tires, I don't think will help with that.
There are ways. So yeah, well, there's not a whole lot else been going on. There's been some space stuff, but nothing terribly exciting.
Mark got a Tesla whistle. Is that
what? A Tesla whistle?
Yeah. Haven't you heard about these?
No. Okay, fill me in.
Well, I don't know much about it. He just sent me a picture. He's got a Tesla whistle. The cyber, sorry, cyber whistle.
Cyber truck whistle. Okay. Okay. What?
Yeah. Anyways, he's trying to figure out how it was made. He thinks maybe it was cast.
Oh, wow. But,
Google it. I don't know what else to tell you about it. It's a fucking whistle.
It's $50.
And it's sold out.
Inspired by the Cybertruck, the limited edition Cyber Whistle is a premium collectible made from medical grain stainless steel with a polished finish. The whistle includes an integrated attachment feature for added versatility. Final sale. I don't know if I would,
to raise cash.
Absolutely. 100%. But I mean, I don't know if I would call that a polished finish.
It's not that nice looking on the photo. Thing. Yeah.
Let's nitpick. And it's definitely cast. I can see some sand casting residue on the inside of the hole there.
I'm going to have to ask Mark if it looks as bad as it does in these photos.
You know what, man? I appreciate that they don't take themselves too seriously. You just, you know, sell some shit, make a, you know, couple hundred grand.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Fucking whistle.
Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not really hurting anybody.
No, no. It comes in a nice box.
It's like the...
We have it. So Mark also bought us a Tesla hard drive. That's what we used to transfer files onto the CNC, onto the Haas.
Oh, like a USB drive?
Yeah, yeah. Tesla USB drive. He's a fanboy.
So are these... Right. Are these all things, you know, Tesla related for people that can't buy a Tesla?
Maybe.
Is that what the deal is?
Might be.
Oh, I see on their website that you've sent me to, they have an apparel section.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So get yourself a nice a hoodie.
Onesie.
Yeah. Does one of them say, my other car is a Tesla?
It says, made on Earth by humans.
Ooh, look at this. The Cyber Quad.
Oh, yeah.
That's a little four-wheeled ATV electric dirt bike for kids.
Oh, hell yeah.
But it goes. It's out of stock. It's $1,900. It'll do 15. It has 15 miles range. It'll do 10 miles an hour. Oh my god.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks dope. I would ride that to work.
Yeah, that's fucking sweet.
That's okay. What's this? A mini Tesla? Ooh, you can get like Hot Wheels Teslas.
Okay, everyone just go to the Tesla website and explore so we don't
waste your time
talking about all this shit on Tesla's website.
Oh my god, dude. I didn't know this was a thing. It's stupid.
Bob, I mean, people fucking, they'll buy anything these people make.
Why not, right? Like,
that's great.
Get all of the
incredible brand.
Yeah, well, you get all of the kind of extra revenue that you need and... Yeah, they should sell batteries. Why don't they sell batteries? I would buy, you know, a couple of the 4685 batteries or whatever they are, the new ones.
Yeah, I'm surprised they don't.
Make me a battery.
You know that they just were in a board meeting. They're all like to Elon, and they're like, we need to sell merch. And he was like, a four-wheeler. Yeah, merch.
Belt buckles. Yeah, well, it looks like they're having fun with it, so why not?
All right. I am bushed. You are bushed too.
Well, I got to get back to work. I've got lots of work still to do.
Yeah.
I got to keep all my fingies attached, though. So, yeah. And I think this will be our last episode for the year, right?
I guess so. It's the 15th.
We've really ended it on an important note.
Yeah.
Tesla merch and
it's funny cause
sim racing.
I have like 15 things I wanted to, I put on my list to talk about. I think we talked about like two.
Mm-hmm.
And then.
Yeah, that's fine. Lots of, you hear that, everyone? We've got lots of exciting CNC related stuff to talk about in the new year.
Yes. Cool, cool. All right.
Plus, we all work too much. It can't all be work. You have to have some fun and games every once in a while. So, yes. Thank you for joining us for all this year. Thank you for listening to Nick's voice. At least you didn't have to look at his face like I do.
Oh.
Love you all. We will speak to you next year.
Alrighty. See you, buddy.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.